Okay, we're gonna call the, we're calling the Town of Discovery Bay meeting to order. Would you join Director Graves in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect that in the building, all board members are present.
All right, at this particular time, it's a public comment period, and we're gonna invite the public to speak. At the current moment, no one is in, from the public is in our building. So with that, I'm gonna ask if there's any public on the teleconference line.
Probably Chief McGill regarding that. Sorry to interrupt, but you guys are still gonna be on separate room, that's the chance for you now, okay?
Yeah, the people that you had online, they're part of our meeting. I was looking for someone that thing we did not give in.
Yes, I'll connect you over to them, okay? So that every one of you will be joined.
Yeah, but wait, can you, before you do that, we've got a, and this is new, this is all new, I get it. We've got a small glitch though, because if he didn't have the members of the public on there, they haven't heard you open the public meeting yet, nor have they heard you take roll call. So when they're attached, whoever the moderator is, if they could tell us that they are attached, announce the meeting, and then you'll turn it back over to the chair.
Yes, what's going to happen is that once I transfer you, you will hear a brief music, and then once I turn it off, I'll be able to introduce the hall, then you can go ahead and begin the conference, all right?
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry, Member Pease.
No problem.
No, it's okay. Just to note, you will be on hold when I transfer you to the main conference. I will begin the introduction and turn the call over to Bill Pease. Please be aware that during the transfer and introduction, your line is open, and anything you say will be heard in the main conference. I'm transferring you now, one more. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay CSB Board Meeting Conference Call. At this time, all participants live are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question or comment during the session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Bill Pease. Can you please begin?
Okay, thank you. We've opened the meeting and we've had the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm asking for public comments, so if there's anybody that's on from the public that's on the line, do you have any public comment?
And this is Rod Atterbury, legal counsel. I think what his indication was and instructions was is you have a comment during the public comment, you push star 1. Chair Pease, I'd recommend that you find the public comments closed and move to the next item.
Will do. Public comments are closed. We'll now move to the consent calendar. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, at this point, we're going
to... Sorry, Mr. Dish. Like I said, this is all going to be new to us and that. You indicated that you have all five board members there before we were connected with everybody. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so, no, we have no board member attending telephonically. Therefore, you could do all of them by voice call, our voice vote. I would ask that you ask for those in favor and then any opposed, because on the call we can't tell how many people said yes, how many people said no.
All right, we'll do.
Thank you. We will absolutely get through this.
Not a problem. At this point, we're going to go to presentations. Turn it over to staff, D1.
Okay,
Okay, I'd like to introduce Nikki Talmadge with Brandis Talmadge, who is going to present on some project financing options. Nikki?
Yes, hi, good evening, President and Directors. I'm Nikki Talmadge, and I'll just quickly say I'm glad to see everybody here and healthy. Thank you for having me. And my business partner, Rick Brandis, and I wish the town and you all health through this unprecedented time. My firm, Brandis Talmadge, is an investment banking firm. We do public finance for agencies throughout the state. We underwrite bonds and we directly place bonds. We had the opportunity to serve the CSD here, having underwritten enterprise revenue bonds in 2017. And we are a member of the California Special Districts Association Financing Corporation consulting team. So if a special district in the state has a financing inquiry, we are a resource through the CSDA for that special district. The district has two outstanding bond issues, and here's a snapshot of those issues. The district has enterprise revenue bonds from 2017. The amount outstanding is currently approximately $8.4 million. The interest rate is approximately 4%. The final maturity is 2047. And those bonds are callable any date on or after December 1, 2027 at par, which means at no cost to, no premium to prepay the bonds. The bonds are AA rated, which is an excellent rating. There is therefore no reserve fund required for the bonds, and the district has a rate covenant of net revenues to debt service of 125. This bond financed improvements to the water and the wastewater enterprise, approximately 89% wastewater, 11% water. And we were the underwriter for those bonds. The district also has 2012 enterprise revenue bonds outstanding. Currently, there's approximately $12 million outstanding. The interest rates on those bonds range from 4% to 5%. And the final maturity is 2042. Those bonds are callable any date on or after December 1, 2022, and they also are callable at par, rated AA, and have a rate covenant of 125 to 1. That bond also financed improvements to water and wastewater enterprise, approximately 89% wastewater, and again, 11% water. We're going to talk a little bit about the current market. It's part of the reason that I'm here. As underwriter to the district, we analyze the district's debt about every 6 months. We work with staff to file continuing disclosure reports and annual reporting, and we look at the outstanding bonds in light of the current market. And when we had our meeting about a month ago, we discussed where interest rates are and what opportunity that might provide the district. As you know, we are in a historically low interest rate environment. All of the benchmarks for municipal bonds hit all-time lows this year. Last week, on March 5th or 9th, we had all-time lows on interest rates. So since then, it's been very interesting. Interest rates have shown more volatility in the last week than they have since 1982, with Tuesday being the biggest volatility in the market. So interest rates increased between 30 and 90 basis points. But in general, we're at a point of historical lows in the market. I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you what will happen in the next 3 months, but
Next 3 days.
In the next 3 hours even. But it's an interesting time. And again, where the interest rates are has provided the district an opportunity to look at refunding the 2012 enterprise bonds. Again, these financed acquisitions of improvements to the water and wastewater system. Underlying rating is AA, which again is really very good. These bonds, as I said, are not callable until December of 2022. And the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 eliminated a municipality's ability to refund on an advance basis, meaning refund more than 90 days from the call date on a tax-exempt basis. But the availability to refund the bonds on a taxable basis exists. And with the taxable interest rate so low right now, we did an analysis on a taxable refunding of those bonds. This is a summary of the refunding. The new amount would be approximately $13 million. The new interest rate on the bonds would be approximately 2.85%. And again, the interest rate on the existing bonds is between 4 and 5%. So you can see that interest rate differential is generating savings to the district. The all-in true interest cost, which includes all of the cost of issuance, is just over 3%, 3.05. Again, the final maturity is 2042. And savings that could be generated are estimated at about $43,000 per year, with total savings just under $1 million, $994,000. The net present value savings are approximately $722,000, or 6%. And the industry standard for net present value savings percentage is 3%. And that is set by some of the larger issuers in the state, including the state of California. So if NPV savings are 3% or greater, it's at least worth looking at, which is why we're here to present you with the results tonight.
I have a question.
Yes.
We currently owe roughly $12 million. Mm-hmm. If we refinance, we're going to owe $13,185. And we're still going to be able to show a $990,000 over the lifetime savings. Where's the $1,180,000 going?
The par amount of the new bonds will pay off the old bonds, will pay cost of issuance, and will escrow the existing bonds through their call date. And that escrow has to be funded to pay off the old bonds and to pay interest through the call date. And that interest amount is about just over $1 million. So there's also premium on the bond issue, but the differential is a majority of interest that's due through the call date and cost of issuance.
It's over and above the cost of issuance. Cost of issuance is an addition to the...
The savings are net of the cost of issuance and the escrow cost through the call date.
And the cost of issuance is part of that $1.18 million?
It is.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we looked at the opportunity to refinance the existing debt based on the market. And the alternative is obviously not to do a refinancing. If the district chose to wait until closer to the call date, December of 2022, it could look at a refunding at that time if the interest rates were favorable. Will the interest rates be at this level or near it in 2 years? We don't know, but it isn't. It, you will have another opportunity to refund in 2022. We did an analysis to determine the interest rate increase that would have to take place in order to negate your savings, and it would be more than 125 basis points, so more than 1.25%. I think 6 months ago, we would say that that was a huge movement in the municipal bond market, 1.25%, but seeing that rates increased 90 basis points in the last week on some indexes, maybe an increase of 125 basis points could happen in a month. We don't know, but we do know that savings could be provided now. When considering a bond refinancing or a new money financing, it's prudent to talk about if you need new money for projects, because combining new money with a refunding will save on the cost of issuance. And so we talked a little bit about the possible financing needs that the district might have for both its water and its wastewater systems. Combining the financing will reduce the cost of issuance. The key for new money issuance is if you expect to spend 85% of the proceeds within 3 years, the new financing can be tax exempt. That's kind of the benchmark. Otherwise, it would have to be a taxable financing. Because we know that there are new projects that the district is considering for the wastewater system, we looked at a new financing for $5 million, a new financing for $7.5 million, and a new financing for $10 million. We looked at all three financings on a tax-exempt basis, assuming that 85% of the proceeds would be spent within 3 years. You can see that the arbitrage yield to interest rate is very low. It's about 1.88%. The all-in true interest cost is just under 3% with a final maturity of 2050. So we looked at a 30-year new money financing. And you can see here a debt service on the $5 million project fund is about $251,000. Annual debt service on a $7.5 million project would be about $374,000. And debt service on a $10 million project would be just under $500,000. We also looked at financing for new projects for the water system, and not knowing if the proceeds would be spent within 3 years, we looked at two scenarios. We looked at financing a $4 million project, fully tax exempt, so assuming you could spend 85% of the $4 million in 3 years. And you can see the average debt service would be approximately $200,000. And then we looked at an $8 million project fund, assuming half of it would be tax exempt and half of it would be taxable. And debt service on that scenario on an annual basis is approximately $420,000. So we wanted to just provide some analysis and some scenarios for both the refinancing opportunity that exists due to the low interest rates and the new money in the event that the district were interested in financing for new projects.
Question, Nikki.
Yes.
The reason or the difference between the taxable and the non-taxable, we can't refund non-taxable before that call date.
You cannot advance refund a bond on a tax-exempt basis.
Tax-exempt, right.
Unless it's within 90 days of the call date.
And if we do it on a taxable basis, we can do it at any time. And we don't have the limitation or the, we don't have to spend the money as quickly on a taxable basis.
On a taxable basis, that's true. And it's interesting because we you look at the taxable interest rates and the tax exempt interest rates right now, and historically they are 1% apart. So if a tax exempt rate is 4%, your taxable rate would be 5%. But those interest rate, that differential has narrowed to really a historic spread. So maybe 30, 50, 60, 70 basis points, depending on the week. So agencies that issue on a taxable basis aren't penalized as gravely as they used to be.
And what's the ability to price an issue right now? What's your ability to price an issue right now?
Last Thursday, the state of Cal issued, had a geo bond issue at the beginning of last week that came to market. And for the most part was sold. It sold at higher interest rates ultimately than it went out at, because the underwriters for the state could not place it given the dysfunction in the market. The rest of the bond issues last week were pulled. So no municipal bonds came to market last week. This week, no bonds have come to market so far. We have a bond issue that was expected to go to market today and one next week, and we've pulled both of them. So at this moment, there's enough dysfunction in the market that bonds aren't pricing.
So whatever our decision, if we decide to do anything, it's best to wait at least a little bit of time until the market settles down.
And it would be a necessity to wait. A transaction takes about 90 days to process. So even if you said go next week, we wouldn't be in the market for 3 months.
And if we got close to that, let's say we had planned to go out and we wanted to do something within 90 days, and as we got close to that 90 days, we realized the numbers don't really work out that well, we can still pull it back.
You can still pull it.
Right.
You can pull it up until the pricing day, which is the day that we buy the bonds from you and commit to reselling them at the stated interest rates. All of the parties that work on the financing work on spec. So we don't get paid until the bonds are issued, with the exception of the rating.
Rating in the official statement, right?
The rating.
And the printing of the official
statement. And the printing of the official statement, exactly. So the rating fee would be approximately $17,000 or $20,000 on the refunding piece. And about 2 to 3 weeks before the pricing, you would receive that rating and incur that cost, whether or not you went to market. And the printing cost could be
$2,000. Do any other members have questions?
I just had a quick question. Why does the true-in interest rate change with the loan amount?
The true interest cost, as the par amount gets bigger, the true interest cost gets smaller because the costs are fixed but are spread over a bigger par amount. So as a percentage of a larger par amount, they shrink.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Question?
Yes.
No, I think that's fine. So the one thing, just to highlight what Director Leet had said, is that there's no risk in signing up and then waiting to see what happens, because we really don't know what's going to happen to the market, and we get an opportunity to see it before any costs are incurred. And then there's a small window that will hit up towards the end date where we will incur some cost, but it sounds like about $20,000.
About $20,000, $22,000, that's correct. And staff time that goes into reading the documents and assisting with the attorneys and with our firm of putting the documents together.
Perfect.
What would happen, let's assume that we got to that point, market wasn't right, we pulled a bond, and let's say 3 months later, market look good, we want to reissue. Do we have to have another rating?
That's a good question. The rating is good for about 3 months. And so at the 3 month mark, if you issue later than that, you have to go back and get a refreshed rating. And it's my understanding that there's no charge for a refreshed rating unless you go over a year.
Okay. All right. So the fee fees that we pay, the $20,000, $22,000 that we risk,
right,
or commit to. If we held it back, then it wouldn't be an additional charge anyway.
That's right.
Within a year.
Within a year.
Within a year. And I'll confirm that's 9 months or a year, but I think it's a year. And what the rating agency will do is they'll just kind of take a fresh look and say, has anything happened in the last 3 months that would change our view on the credit?
You mentioned that the cost of issuance, if we put refinance the existing bond and then take out some a new bond, would be less. In your notes, you indicated that if we did all three of these loans, they're about $615,000 to $720,000 in the cost of issuance. If we did them separately, if we roll these together, what kind of reduction do we have in that?
A majority of the costs are fixed, so there are a couple that are percentage-based, like, for example, an underwriting fee, our fee, but let me... I would say probably about 80% savings in the cost.
That's good. Yeah. Bond counsel's, it doesn't make any difference how big the issue is. Bond counsel is bond counsel.
For the most part.
And trustee is pretty much trustee.
Trustee, for the most part.
For the most part.
So if bond counsel charges, for example, $50,000 for $4 million, they'll probably charge, if you were to issue $15 million, they might charge $55,000. The underwriter gets paid a percentage of the par amount. So that's just a direct variable expense.
All right.
But most of the costs are fixed.
So some incremental savings.
Some incremental savings.
We run it together. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Is there any other questions from the board?
No.
Is there any public comment in the meeting room here? The public, no public has appeared. I will go to the teleconference. Is there any public in the on the teleconference line that would like to comment?
And Mr. Chair, I'll just indicate that there are a couple people that have chimed in, and as a result of them, are not chimed in, have signed up now, so they might have missed the instruction. The instruction to ask a question is *1. You can ask for any more public comment and close it.
Is there any?
Excuse me, presenters. We have the line of Frank Vicente, who wants to ask a question or post a comment.
Go ahead, Mr. Vicente.
Okay. Can people hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay. A review and analysis of the Town of Discovery Bay's financials, the Town of Discovery Bay's projects through fiscal year 2029. And the Brandis-Tallman bond refinance proposal led to the question of why the rush? Yes, at this point in time, bond rates are lower now than the original bond rates, but refinancing now before the bond's call provision date means refinancing with taxable bonds versus non-taxable bonds. The associated refinancing expenses and the refinance assumption. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Is there any other public comments?
There are no further comments at this time. Please continue.
All right. Thank you very much. I believe we got your presentation.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki.
At this point, we're going to go to presentations D2.
Okay, President Pease, we are going to bring in Allison from Lekowitz and Same Municipal Consultants to talk about the district's proposed water and wastewater rate studies for fiscal years 2020 to 2025. Allison, please go ahead.
Okay, hello, good evening. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So I don't believe I have the power to control the PowerPoint slides, so I think I'll just say next slide, please, as we progress through.
Okay.
So let's go to slide two, please. Okay. So water and sewer rates are subject to Proposition 218. That means they must be based on the reasonable cost of providing service. They must proportionally recover costs based on how customers take service. And we can adopt a five-year rate plan all at once with one study. In addition to that, there are procedural requirements. The development of the rate study satisfies the proportionality and cost of service basis, but then there's also a requirement to mail notices to property owners, hold a public hearing 45 days later or longer, and then count and tabulate a protest vote. So tonight is really just our first public meeting. There will be additional public meetings and additional opportunity for the public to comment on proposed rates. And just to remind folks that the water and sewer utilities are enterprise funds, meaning that the rates and fees charged to the ratepayers really are supposed to be self-supporting, but the utilities don't have outside funding sources. So let's go to slide three. So in this rate study, we're updating the cost of service, meaning we're updating the cost of operations, debt obligations, the cost to repair or replace infrastructure, and the cost of maintaining reserves for emergencies. So all of that information we're taking from all publicly available documents, district budgets, district capital improvement plans, published bond documents. And then, as I mentioned, there are legal requirements mostly related to Proposition 218 with establishing the cost of service and proportionality. And then we also had a look at upcoming water conservation requirements, in particular requirements related to customers needing to reduce indoor water demand. So our rate plan, the first rate adjustment would go into effect July 1st. Let's go to the next slide, please. So overall, the utilities are in good financial shape. Both utilities have a very strong reserve. The water fund has about $2.7 million in reserves. The sewer fund has about $8.3 million. So a big part of the study is looking at the amount of reserves that we want to use to fund projects and the amount of reserves we want to hold for emergency purposes. So as we just heard, the district does have some outstanding bonds, but you also have capacity to take on new debt. So that means that revenues are in excess of expenses, leaving you some room to take on additional debt service costs to fund these new projects. The district's financial strategy in the past has always included a combination of debt funding as well as cash funding projects. So in this presentation, I have multiple options, and some are more debt heavy and some are more cash funding heavy. So there's a mix of different options. Let's go to the next slide. So, utilities are very capital-intensive enterprises, and really it is the capital improvement plan for both water and sewer that's driving proposed rate changes. For water, the capital plan over the next 5 years through 2025 includes about $12 million of projects. The most costly project is ongoing pipeline replacements, and then followed by the Well 8 project for about $5 million. And then the other projects are a smaller dollar amount. So on the next slide, please. So as I mentioned, we have a range of financing options to talk about tonight. All the options use $1.7 million in current available reserves. to start funding those capital projects. And that is in excess of the emergency reserve of about $1.2 million. And then all the project funding options maintain a very healthy debt service coverage ratio to maintain the town's good credit rating. And then just as a policy discussion, the benefit of debt, is that it spreads the cost of infrastructure over its useful life. You know, we're kind of looking and talking about, you know, 30-year bonds covering assets that will last over 30 years. And then the disadvantage is that you would be paying interest costs. But if you look at no debt, that raises the rates higher because you're funding something in 1 or 2 years that then will last 30 years. So there's a more immediate short-term impact on the ratepayer for a project will provide service over a long time. So next slide, please. So I know there's a lot of numbers on the sheet. So we ran a range of water funding options. So there are three water options, a no debt option, the $4 million option, the $8 million option. And I was listening to Brandis Tallman's presentation, and my debt service estimates were a little high. So the rates kind of shown here could even potentially be reduced slightly. So that's good news. So just to kind of briefly go over this chart. So each year, the kind of top portion of the chart is showing the percent rate revenue increase. So over the whole water system, the total amount that rate revenue needs to increase. So not every customer will get exactly that percent increase, but that's the total or average rate increase. So under a no debt option, you're funding capital improvements from those existing reserves, and then also the ratepayers are bearing a more heavy burden over the first couple of years when the full brunt of most of the projects is hitting. So for a no debt option, it'd be a 20% increase and then followed by a 15% increase. And then some feedback I received was that there was interest in having small inflationary increases in years 3, 4, and 5, just to kind of keep up with some inflationary operating cost increases. And then, so we have a $4 million debt option and an $8 million debt option. And the $8 million debt option is the lowest rate increase because we're not cash financing very much at that option. So there's not as much immediate near-term cost burden on the ratepayer. So more of the cost is spread over that 30-year term. So under the $8 million option, there's very minor, you know, 1% increases over the 5 years because that debt service cost is pretty relatively low compared to the total cost of operating the water system. So the added cost of the new debt service is fairly low. And then the bottom half of the table shows the cumulative rate increases. So that's the compounding effect. So rate increase in year one, and then on top of that, prior year rate increase is the new rate increase, and so that shows the cumulative impact. And again, these are the total average system-wide revenue increase, and then individual ratepayers will get different rate changes based on how much water they use and their meter size and some other factors that I'll talk about. So next slide, please. So just a few rate design topics quickly to review. I mentioned in the beginning of the presentation that one aspect of the water utility that we were reviewing is long-term water conservation. So there is a statewide mandate to reduce indoor water use per capita from about 55 gallons per person per day in 2025, and then down to 50 gallons per day by 2030, I believe. So we're kind of talking about water conservation beyond the five-year period covered in our rate study, but we don't want to overestimate our water sales, right? If the district is trending towards more conservation, lower water use, we don't want to overestimate the value of water sales. So what I did was assumed a slight water conservation trend, especially towards the end of the five-year period. And kind of the prevailing thought is that the State Board is going to really ramp up its enforcement actions on water conservation in 2027. So really, I kind of suspect many water purveyors in California are really going to clamp down on conservation in 2025, 26, 27. So probably your next rate study will reflect that to a greater degree. But I just wanted to touch on it and start some of the financial consequences being reflected in this rate study. So down at the bottom of the chart, I show the typical bill of a residential customer with a 1-inch meter and 13 units of water used per month. And you might say, wait, those typical bills, the typical monthly bill, the increases don't quite match the cumulative percentages I showed on the prior chart. And that's what I was mentioning about how, due to a kind of our proportionality and cost allocation piece behind the scenes, not every customer will get exactly the percent average system in rate increase. And then I also wanted to point out that this chart shows the typical customer using 13 units of water per month each year of the 5 years, but really we expect people to slightly decrease their usage to about 12. So if a person is following that trend downward to 12 units, their bill would more closely match those cumulative system-wide increases that I showed on the prior chart. So let's go to the next slide, please. So I conducted a bill survey comparing Discovery Bay's current bill with the proposed three rate options. And some feedback I received from the Finance Committee was to do more research and look to see if any other local agencies have planned rate increases for July 1st, kind of coinciding with the potential rate increase we're discussing. And we did, in fact, find a lot of the other agencies do have planned rate increases. And you can kind of see the other local agencies with the lower bills, like Manteca and Rio Vista, have not updated their rates in quite a few years. So they're kind of behind the curve. And that's why they're kind of down in the lower end of the table of the survey agencies. So the history at Discovery Bay has always been that your water bills have tended to be pretty low, and then the sewer bills have tended to be pretty high, and then the average bill, both utilities combined, tends to fall in the middle. So we can see here, even with some proposed rate increases, Discovery Bay's ranking would not change too much. So let's go to the next slide, please. So for wastewater, we're looking at about $17 million of capital projects, the biggest one being denitrification of about $9.6 million, and wastewater plant one refurbishments at about $4.5 million. So in total, with the other minor projects, we're looking at funding about $17 million of total projects over the next 5 years. So if we go to the next slide. So I've developed a range of options from no debt to $10 million in financing. And then same story, similar to water, is that there are some available reserves that the options are using, $3.5 million. But we are maintaining emergency reserves, and we are maintaining a strong credit rating with ample debt service coverage. Next slide, please. So here we've done four options, no debt up to the $10 million of debt. And same, kind of very similar story, water, where if we have no debt, there's a higher cost burden to the ratepayer in the first few years. And then if we spread debt over a 30-year term, it's a more minor impact on the ratepayer. And you can see the difference between $5 million, $7.5 million, $10 million, you know, fractions of a percent. And that's because the new debt service cost is so small compared to the total like operating cost of the utility as a whole. But yeah, so I didn't find a huge distinction in the rate impacts between the debt service options. I did include a chart with the cumulative impacts as well for sewer, so those will be there to review. But we can move ahead to chart number 13, the next slide. And it is a wastewater rate impact at the top. Sorry about that. So for wastewater, and what we found was that residential flow is actually down. So our prior rate studies assumed that a typical single-family home is discharging 14 units of sewer flow into the wastewater system. But a more up-to-date review of wastewater flow at the treatment plant indicates only 9 units of wastewater flow. So what that means is that single-family customers have a lower cost burden, and then non-single-family customers, their proportional share of the treatment plant is higher than we previously assumed. Down below are the proposed rate impacts. So this is the typical monthly bill of a single family residential customer. So you bill annually on the property tax roll, so I took that amount and then just divided by 12 to show a comparable customer bill. If we go to the next chart, we also did a rate survey on the sewer side. And like I mentioned earlier, Discovery Bay's wastewater bill has always tended to be on the high side. It will remain on the high side. We saw Lathrop there was the only other one that was potentially higher. But then if we look at the combined bill on the next chart, the Discovery Bay combined bill of water and sewer together falls in the middle range of survey agencies. And just a reminder that Manteca and Rio Vista, way down there on the low end, have not updated their rates in several years. So that's why they're a little bit artificially low. So just to wrap up, presented a few times now to the Finance Committee to help shape the options we've discussed tonight. So tonight is purely informational. I'm happy to answer questions, take direction, revise the alternatives. We plan to return on April 1st and receive direction from the board regarding the preferred rate options. I will finalize the preferred options into the final report for April 15th, and then we'll plan on printing and mailing the Proposition 218 notices to customers on April 17th. Customers have the right to protest the water rates, sewer rates, or both. Protest must be in writing and received by the end of the public hearing. And then if there is more than a 50% majority protest, the rates cannot be implemented. So we'll plan on holding the public hearing on June 3rd. If approved, rates will go into effect July 1st. And then the caveat is Proposition 318. The process allows you to adopt a legal maximum rate. So if you find that in some years maybe water use is a lot higher than what we expected, or plant one on the wastewater side is not as costly to operate as we expected, and there's not as great a need for a rate increase, you're always able to adopt a lower rate increase or no rate increase based on, you know, budget information, and you do not have to do another hearing process. So I know that's a lot of information. I'm happy to answer questions and provide clarification. And then if there's any discussion of, we don't have to make a decision tonight about the preferred rate option, but if there's any particular direction the board is leaning, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, I'll ask the board if there are any clarifying questions. Seeing none, it's time for public comment. Do we have any public comment on the rate study? Seeing none, I'll go to the teleconference. Do we have any general public that would like to comment?
Yes, excuse me, presenters. We do have another comment or question here from the line of Frank Wittenstein. You may now go ahead.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Once again, why the rush? Water and wastewater rates approved in 2016 were to continue through fiscal year 2020/2021. However, the fiscal year 2020/2021 rates are now being increased depending on bond debt options. The Town of Discovery Bay's planned projects for fiscal year 2019 through 2029 total $29.4 million, and the net available funds for fiscal years 2018 through 2021 total $29.5 million. The difference is $80,000 in net available funds. Does the bond refinancing and water and wastewater rate increases at this time make sense? Thank you.
All right, appreciate your comments. Is there any other public on the teleconference line?
There are no further comments or questions. You may please proceed.
All right, thank you. We'll bring it back to the board for any further discussion and or motion. Well, we don't have a motion. This is just a, any further discussion? Allison, I think the presentation was very good. You've got a lot of information for us to think about during the next couple of weeks, and we look forward to our next meeting to kind of finalize this. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go to business items, F1, the discussion. I'll bring it to staff.
This is going to be a discussion of possible action to accept the audited financial statements for fiscal year 2018-2019, and we have Mark Croce to present that to you. Mark?
Hello, this is Mark Croce with Croce, Sanguinetti and Vanderbeek. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you ready for me to go?
Yes, we are.
Great. I'm here. It's been great. You've had a lot of information that's very forward-looking, and we're going to have to put our brakes on and now look back to the past. So we have prepared the audit report, the independent auditor's report, for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2019. I do believe that there are slides that will follow along, and I will try to reference page numbers as I go through. I wanted to start by letting you know that as you're hearing a new voice this year, we have implemented a partner rotation at our firm. So your previous audit partner was Pauline Sanguinetti at our firm, and for the audit for the fiscal year ended June 30th of 2019, I took over as the lead partner. So there was a new set of eyes looking at the financial reports and everything that was prepared for the audit for this fiscal period. And that was in accordance with direction from the board of directors and others, so we were wanting to let you know that that is why you're hearing from me this year and not Pauline. In addition, just an overall comment regarding the district and its audit. We wanted to let you know that as part of the process, we were able to Our audit process went very well. We were able to prepare the reports and get everything out to you, and we just want to let you know that we were very pleased with the progress the district continues to make in its accounting department and in its financial reporting activities. It's been continuous improvement, and we are very pleased to let you know that. If we want to flip into pages 1 and 2, it is our independent auditor's report. I am pleased to let you know that this is an unmodified report, which is always accountants. We're very conservative, so it sounds like, well, what does that mean? That is the highest level of assurance we can give. It is indicative that we were able to do everything we needed to do, and the report is indicating that all items are in place for the district. In addition, in accordance with government auditing standards, we have also issued our report that is also dated March 6th in consideration of internal controls over financial reporting and in compliance with provisions of laws and regulations. And I am pleased to let you know that that report is also an unmodified report. Flipping into page number 3 of the report is the management's discussion and analysis. This is where I find is a great place to show to point to readers. It gives you a nice overview of the district. The highlights, as we've indicated here, net position of the district increased by $2,377,000 over the prior year. Total assets of the district were $71 million, with capital assets comprising $48 million. Which was net of accumulated depreciation. Current and non-current other assets were $22 million. Liabilities were $21,985,000, which was long-term debt of $21,005,000, and other liabilities of $980,000. So as we go on, the district, you know, we're looking at a very healthy financial report for the town of Discovery Bay. We do go on and indicate in the overview, we describe the different financial statements. On page 5, we have a nice year-to-year summary that really gives a snapshot of what's happening at the district in both their governmental activities and business-type activities. As described above, your governmental activities include items like the community center, lighting and landscaping, etc. Business activities would include items like the sewer and water and the wastewater funds that we've just discussed the rates on and bonds related to. As a part of the district, we have to remember that your district also includes your financing authority. That is where we house the payments for the bonds and handle the bonded indebtedness. So on page 5, we have the nice summary, governmental business total. I'm going to try to go kind of quickly. If you'd like me to slow down, please let me know. As far as page 6, we look at the revenues and expenses. By governmental activities and business type activities, we can see that for governmental activities, total revenues of $2.5 million, total expenditures of $1.3 million for a change in fund position after transfers of $1.1 million. Business type activities, which again is primarily water and wastewater, $10,360,000 of revenues, $9,183,000 of expenses. After transfers, a positive change in position of $1.2 million. Moving on page 7, we have some information presented in chart form. Sometimes that's helpful for readers to be able to follow along in a more visual way, and that continues on to page 8. In pages 9 and 10, we again just go through continued discussion of capital assets and different items that are pertinent to the district. For the fiscal year ended June 30th of 19, there were a number of projects that were in place. However, a lot of the items as far as capital assets related were items that will continue on. You're going to see those as part of your construction in progress. So you will see there's the Newport's SCADA upgrade project, well 2 pump replacement project. There was a wastewater treatment operations maintenance manual project, community center pool and renovation project. And the lighting and landscaping district, there was a direct purchase of a utility tractor, spreader, and aeration components. So those are kind of the major capital asset items for the year. Debt administration, we've already reviewed that in the earlier part of the meeting a little bit, but I mean, basically we've just been paying down the debt. So the debt was at June 30th of 2019 was $20,945,000 compared to $21,435,000 for the prior year, which represents continued pay down of the outstanding bonded indebtedness. Moving on to page numbers 12 and 13, these are your statements of net position. Again, the information was summarized at the front of the presentation. I'm not going to go through all this in detail, again, unless somebody would like me to do so, but this gives you the detail of your current assets, non-current assets, and liabilities of the district, where you can see the governmental activities have total assets of $4.8 million. Business type activities, total assets of $66,357,000 with liabilities of $21,835,000, primarily related to the outstanding bonded indebtedness. On the statements of activities, this is page 13. It's actually in the final report. It will be a facing page, so there are two pages to this report, but it gives you a nice snapshot of the revenues for the year compared to the expenses. So you can see for the general government, community center, lighting and landscaping, what we did, how we charged for service, what our expenses were, what our capital grants and contributions are, and we can see how we basically, what our cost was to run the district, the cost to run all activities for the district on a full accrual basis, $10,502,000. $10,322,000 came in as charges for services, $1,312,000 as capital grants as and contributions, and then you'll see at the bottom part property taxes and other revenues that are more general revenues that are also used to finance the district. Page 14, we just do the same information. We now are required to take that the information on pages 12 and 13 and break them down into the old-fashioned model, which is a modified accrual basis. Again, I'm not going to go through these in detail. What essentially happens is you can flip over onto page number 16 and you can see there are the differences between the full accrual and the modified accrual basis, primarily being the fact that we do not record depreciation. Certain capital outlays are recorded differently. But again, the page 14 is just a sort using the modified accrual basis of accounting versus the full accrual basis of accounting, and you're able to see each of your specific funds detailed by column. Again, we do the same on page 17 and 18 for the proprietary funds, which is water and sewer and the financing authority. Again, nothing earth-shattering here. Moving on to the notes to the statements, these are pretty basic. They're standard from year to year. We describe the reporting entity. We're talking about the blended component units. This entity does include the financing authority, which is a blended component unit to the district. We do include all activities of the governmental funds, the proprietary or enterprise funds, and the financing authority in one set of statements. Aside from that, the remaining statements, you've already heard quite a bit about the outstanding bonded indebtedness. And so there's really not a whole lot of other new items that I can really bring out to you. I wish I could say there were. On page 35, we do talk about the fact that you do keep most of your money at the Contra Costa County Treasurer in their investment pool. We are pleased to let you know that at this time that the Contra Costa County Treasurer does not invest in any derivative instruments. So we do feel that that is a very secure and stable investment portfolio, or as stable as one will find. So we've moved on to accounts receivable. We have general accounts receivable, water and sewer, along with their related allowance for uncollectible. So we have considered uncollectible accounts in determining the net amounts reported for accounts receivable. Moving on, there is a note receivable at the end of this year that is described in note D. We also have the interfund transactions that we do describe in the capital assets. So I kind of believe at this time I'm going to open it up to any statement questions regarding the statements, and then I do have a little more information regarding the letter that we have attached at the end. So I don't know if this is a good time, if I've gone too fast, if you'd like a little more detail. I just don't want to take too much time.
No problem, Mark. Any board questions? Clarity?
Mark, this is Bob Lee. Were there any recommendations from the auditors in terms of substantive changes that we need to make to our systems?
We can go through that now. That will be in the attached letter. There's no substantive changes to your systems that we would recommend at this time. As for an entity of your size, you have implemented adequate internal controls. In fact, you've implemented what I would say are, you know, very progressive internal controls. But again, with the small size of the organization, there are not a lot of people for redundant, you know, to say like, hey, we're really doing job sharing or other things. That's not really possible. We do have some journal entries that were recorded as a part of the audit, and we can go through those at the end when we go through that final, what we call our SAS 114 letter.
Thank you.
Any other questions from no other clarifying questions, so we can probably continue.
Perfect. Then let's go through the our independent. There's two items left, or there's our independent auditor's report on over financial reporting and compliance. That is on page 46. I've already referenced that at the front end of the presentation to indicate this is also an unmodified report. The final item that I believe you should have in your package is our letter to the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District, where we indicate significant audit findings, qualitative aspects of accounting practices, etc. I don't know if that letter is available for the in the PDF document that we sent over. Do you have that?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Great. So in the significant audit findings, the qualitative aspects of accounting practices, this is where we want to comment, and this is where we really get to say what's going on with the district. We're pleased to let you know that that the district has used appropriate accounting principles. We are finding that, you know, there's not an effort being made to try to do anything that would be other than clear and accurate presentation. So if there was something where we felt that was not happening, we would indicate that here. We do talk about accounting estimates. We do have to indicate that the allowance for doubtful accounts is based on prior year's experience, management's analysis of the receivables, and that is a significant estimate that is put into the financial statements. We do have to let you know that your financial statement disclosures, if we felt that those disclosures presented were not neutral, consistent, and clear, we would have to let you know that we felt that the disclosures were not as such. We're here to let you know that yours do meet those requirements of being neutral, consistent, and clear. We did not encounter any difficulties in performing the audit. We have provided a listing of journal entries that are material that we made to the financial statement, the financial report, as part of our audit. You will notice a number of the entities relate to depreciation. That is standard as part of the audit. We do maintain the depreciation schedules for the district. As the district continues to grow, that may be a function that the district would like to do on their own. But at this time, though, that is something where we are providing the depreciation entries for the district. You will also notice that one of the larger entries was related to booking the remaining amount of the note receivable at June 30th, 2019. Disagreements with management, if we felt that there were issues where we disagreed with management and management had gone out saying, hey, we're going to find another auditor that has a different opinion, we would be required to disclose that. That was not a matter that was encountered during the audit. Other findings or issues, we don't have any. And we also let you know that regarding the supplementary information, which includes the management's discussion and analysis, we applied limited procedures in order to assure that those reports also were clear, concise, consistent, and congruent with the remaining financial statements. That is the last part of our letter, just letting you know what we did find during the audit.
All right. Thank you very much. Do we, at this time, from the board, have any clarifying questions? Seeing none, I'll move it to go right ahead.
No. Mary. I'll wait till after.
Is there any public comments? There's no public comments in the building. Is there any public comments on the teleconference line?
There are no further questions at this time. You may continue.
All right. We'll close public comments and bring it back for discussion on the board.
Just a comment that said, new face, new voice, same results. Favorable. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to indicate that to complete the process, we do need to receive the signed audit representation letter, and I know that there would be an interest in getting that complete in order to issue the final reports by March 20th for the disclosure statements, I believe, relative to the bond.
All right, we'll ensure that that happens. So at this point, if there's no other questions, do I hear a recommendation from the board?
I would move if we accept and approve the fiscal year 19 audited financial statements.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous? No one opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much, Mark. We'll be
thank you. Touch.
Okay, with that, we're going to move to business and action item F1.
Okay, we're going to bring up our lighting and landscape manager.
F2.
Good evening. You have the staff report in front of you. So in the lighting and landscape zone 9 budget, there are approved funds for the replacement of the play structure at Ravenswood. Staff did source 3 distributors of different playground equipments, asked them to present their ideas. Some of the criteria we were looking for were continue with the nautical theme, maximize the current space, offer multiple play options, and include shade structures. We were very pleased with the structure for Ross Recreation. Far exceeded our expectations of what we could fit in the space. It's durable, it's easily maintained. And tonight, we're requesting authorization to purchase that equipment for a total of $98,853.90.
Okay, is there any clarifying questions? Or?
I do. Bill, what's the anticipated life cycle for one of these units?
That unit, I think, is 7 to 10 years old, if it's currently there.
And what would the life expectancy be of the replacement unit?
I would expect 10 to 12 years.
Okay. If there's no other questions from the board, I'll open it up to public comment. There is no public here at the time. Is there any public comment on the teleconference line?
Bill, there are no questions or comments at this time.
Thank you. I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for any other questions. I guess the only question I have, there was such a significant difference between one of the vendors and the one you chose. Can you explain a little bit about that?
The least expensive one was more of a basic structure. It only included one structure and swing sets, where this has multiple slides, multiple shade structure areas. We just felt it was a lot more aesthetically pleasing.
How about from a budget standpoint?
So that the total with installation will fit into the budget that's been approved for this replacement.
All right, so we had a CIP project for that. Okay, thank you. And like, I'm assuming that the Parks and Rec Committee is well behind this?
Yes. Yes, it's been reviewed in committee, and we've agreed with the recommendation staff.
All right. With that, no further questions. Do I hear a motion?
Move staff recommendation to purchase that equipment.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Is there any director's reports or reportable items at all? Seeing none, we'll move on to the general manager's report.
Yes, I'd just like to give the board an update on the staff's experience and report a little bit on coronavirus. For the last week, staff has been on daily conference calls with Contra Costa Health Department, the Contra Costa County Emergency Operations Center, and other involved agencies and leaders within our county and adjoining counties, as a matter of fact. There are now 41 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and zero deaths in Contra Costa County. Emergency orders from the Governor's Office and Contra Costa Health are constantly being updated on our website in order to keep our residents informed on this issue. Staff has been coordinating with Veolia, our water and wastewater operator, to institute plans and contingencies to ensure that water and wastewater services continue without interruption. The district's main office remains open during normal business hours. However, customer entry is screened and limited. Our customers are encouraged to call in rather than visit the main office. The community center building is closed, as is the dog park. However, access to the community grounds remain open. All community center programming has been canceled for the next several weeks. All of our parks remain open, subject to social distancing requirements. However, the bathrooms at Cornell Park are closed. I want to compliment staff for their dedication and hard work as we continue to be flexible, innovative, and adaptable to the ever-changing circumstances that come before us. I also want to commend the Discovery Bay residents we serve for their patience and understanding as we wind our way through these turbulent times. Available for any questions on this?
I'd just like to make a comment. I'd like to commend you, Mike, for the amount of time that you've had to spend. I know you've been on weekend conference calls, as we have, and many, many conference calls, and spent a lot of extra time on this issue. It's a very unique situation and new to all of us, but thank you very much for your dedicated time that you put forward.
Thank you. But a lot of it's staff, too, so thank you.
Yeah, and I'd also like to duplicate that. You've done an excellent job in handling this unforeseen incident. Okay, are there any future agenda items that the board might want to bring?
If I could, I probably missed a spot, but I attended Senator Glazer's conference call. It's either Monday or Tuesday. I think he had a capacity of 1,400. I did not hear the total number that got on there. I did submit one question and actually got it read on the call. It was really a meeting so that the public can address the supermarkets, pharmacies, I believe, gas stations, some of the other issues. So we had executives from the supermarket chain as well as executives from CVS and Rite Aid, I believe. About an hour, it was a very worthwhile call. Didn't get a lot of concrete answers as you would expect from executives. Not a complete dig on that, but it's hard for them to have all the details, especially when the questions were very detailed, but very, very worthwhile. So that's it.
Can I just say, let me just add one thing based on the fact that I work for the state and also in part of the National Guard. The National Guard has been put on alert. There was a Franco order that went out today for mobilization by some of the medical units. Fortunately, none of the MP units. I'm attached to an MP unit. We hope that does not occur because that would indicate probably some civil unrest and some other issues. But at this point, the National Guard has been put on notice that they could be called up, and some of the medical units have been called up to help mitigate some of the testing and other issues that are going on.
Okay, thank you for the update. No other comments, meeting adjourned. Teleconference, thank you very much.